This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back for the beginning of hour two. Kelly and Ramya, and you. I am at the home studio, London, Ontario. Sport coat on, white shirt, and the fedora sitting on top of the head. Ramya at the main office in Toronto, hanging out there on main campus today. Welcome, Rum. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Kevin. The white table in front of the Toronto skyline and the lit up white and purple pillars. I'm also wearing a very comfortable, I decided to go comfy with the Friday vibes, and I'm wearing like a nice knitted black cardigan over a gray t-shirt.
Well, comfortable is the way to go as we're swinging open the gateway to the weekend. We want people to just settle in, get all relaxed and ready, but also start thinking about making sure you enter our contest, folks. Speaking of relaxed and settled back, enter now for your chance to win a Tempur-Pro Adapt mattress. Tempur-Pedic mattresses are designed with one-of-a-kind Tempur material to precisely adapt to your weight, shape, and temperature, offering unmatched comfort and support. For complete rules, if you want to enter to win this, folks, or any of your questions to, you know, that you want answers to before you enter, because you're going to do that, right? Please visit ami.ca/KR contest, and this Dream Big contest runs until February the 8th, so we want to make sure you get in on it. Time to talk gardening as we begin the second hour of the program. Let's welcome in our gardener to talk today to us about, well, really cool stuff, but it's so wonderful just to have her back. Susan Kearney. Hey, Suze, how are you?
Good.
So we just talked about the contest, and you're going to now talk about something lucky. I like this. We're featuring the lucky jade plants. Why is it lucky?
Yes. Well, I guess that's what they some people call it, the lucky jade plant or the lucky money plant. Its leaves don't feel like coins.
No.
They're thick because it's part of the succulent family and rather triangle shaped. So I don't know where it got the lucky money plant, plant from, but
yeah, it's like, a lot of Eastern Asia that refers to the jade as the money plant, and knowing the money plant as being a symbolism of luck. But it's true. My exposure to the money plant is quite recent, like the last couple of years. And I will say, when I first felt the leaves, I was like, these don't feel like coins. Because it was supposed to be a resemblance, like a physical resemblance.
Tell us about that, Sue. About, you said part of the, how do you say it, succulent?
It is part of the succulent family, but it is also a vine. And some of my plants, actually, the stems, and they're very thick, the stems are very thick and woody. They'll actually grow in different directions. They don't. Some will stand up straight, some will sort of wind around. I'll find some sort of falling off the table and starting their own journey down, and then I have to prop them up because they're quite, the leaves are quite heavy because it is a succulent, so they're holding all that water. The leaves can be quite heavy. She does have to be propped up, and I have to do that once in a while. I go around to all my plants, my jade plants, and I have to tie the stems up because they will droop down. As I say, they're heavy.
And how hard is that? When they droop like that, is it, you know, I mean, obviously like us, leaving an arm down, you know, and blood flow, like what's the negative side?
I don't think there is one, except if it's the vine plant. I would suspect if it was in its natural habitat, it would probably go along the ground, too, and maybe wind around things, because they do.
Right.
Some of mine look like, the stems look like they have elbows, like they, you know, elbows, because they've bent around each other.
I didn't know that they get really, like, they spread out so much like that, Susan. My money plant stayed quite small for a really long time. But I'm curious, when you say you tie them up, do you use, like, something to help them stand up? as well?
Yes. I actually use I use bamboo stakes,
okay.
And some of them I have to cut because they, you know, that some of them are really tall, and I don't really need tall. I just need stability.
Right.
And then you put that into the soil and put a little bit of a very fine twine. I use a very fine twine and hold them up, and or sometimes just lean them against the bamboo stakes so that they're not hanging down.
And will they kind of follow that in any way as a vine? You know, sometimes, like you said, they'll avoid each other to an extent or go around so those elbows appear. Will they kind of follow that so that, you know, once you get it, or is the tendency due to gravity always to...
Well, sometimes they'll fall over, but then I stake them back up again.
Fix them
I
back
don't
up.
Even Wonderful. Really know that that's the way they're supposed to grow, but it's just easier because when they're falling down
right.
around the pot and off the table and it's just to me it just looks neater. Maybe I'm, you know,
for aesthetic purposes we're going to tie you up.
And I think you probably appreciate that. It's kind of like, you know, you're tidying them up, helping the plant.
My mom's money plant is quite large, and it hangs completely down. Like, she has it up on a higher surface, so it's out of the pot and taller than most of us in the family, I think.
Some of them can get really large, and this is why they're a good plant to have in your home, because if you don't repot them every year, then they tend to stay much smaller, and they don't need they like to be root bound too, which is really interesting, and they're good they're a great plant to choose if you travel. If you're not home a lot and you don't want to, you know, a lot of fussing with a plant, it doesn't mind not having water for 10 days
yes.
to 2 weeks.
I've experimented
so
with that.
It's an easy plant to get along with, and I highly suggest somebody, you know, go out and get a lucky jade plant. That would be fun.
Does anything happen to the leaves in that time period if you're not home? And do you come back
dry.
And do they feel different?
They dry up, and I do go and I prune them off. Mm-hmm. And you could, that's how you can tell that they're, believe it or not, getting too much water or not getting enough water. So you have to figure that out. Getting too much water will also dry the leaves up. They don't like it because
now,
they're
ask about
wet.
That though, Susan, because I've personally and seen all over the internet, so fun, that people actually grow their jade plants in water. Like, they just keep them directly in water, and then they live. I don't know if they grow as much, but they definitely survive and
I've never
root.
Tried it.
Okay.
I have never tried it. Yeah. So just in a pot of water. Well, that's it. I will have to cut one of my jade plants down and root it, and then see.
Yes. I'm so curious if it'll come for you. Because some people have, testimonial-wise, said that theirs wouldn't pick up, like if they could cut their... stem and try to root it, it wouldn't do it. But other ones that you can even buy them just right in water, which is seriously interesting. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. I've never done that, but I do know that with my jade, my older jade plant, and she gives away her age because right now she's flowering. She's got white flowers on her.
Wow.
And the flowers can be white or pink, and they don't flower until they're 4 to 5 years old.
Oh.
They must be very mature.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's I didn't even realize that plants could have life cycles like that. Now, is that common for succulents?
It can be, but for the jade plant, it is an absolute.
Okay.
It will not flower until it's about 4 or 5 years old. So the large one, she's I don't even know how old it is. It's old. It's big. And I just keep on taking bits of her off and repotting them or regrowing them. I think I've got about 10 in the house now.
Mm.
She has lots of children and grandchildren. I think even great grandchildren now.
That's amazing. That's fascinating. Like, the life cycle is beyond just, you know, seasonal for the jade.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they and as I said, they're easy to get along with, and they last a long time.
They do, yeah.
And yeah, they do. They're lovely. They're a lovely plant.
Do you pot your jades with other plants, other succulents? Do you have kind
no.
of a garden?
Okay. Oh, no.
Okay.
No. No, I don't. And the reason for that is mainly for me, because when I'm working with the plants, I like my plants to be separate, because then I know what I'm actually working with. Mm. If you get too many into a planter, and unless you know exactly what's there, then you might be doing something different with another plant that doesn't like what you're doing with the other plant.
Right.
So I tend to keep my plants separate, which takes up an awful lot of space, but it's all right.
But it's your thing. And yeah, and we've talked in the past about the different plants that will get along with other ones, especially if you're,
yes.
you know, putting them into the ground outside, like
yes.
in soil.
Yes.
But
yes, pairing plants, yes.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that is good, because then it, you know, then you don't run into disease problems or moisture, you know, too much moisture or not enough moisture.
Right.
So the jade plant, I've never planted with anything else. But I am going to try the thing with water. That's very interesting.
Try it, let me know.
Something to do.
And if it's an epic
Thank
fail,
you.
Remember, it wasn't just me. Like, other people have done this too.
Okay,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
I shall try it.
Right.
It's a challenge.
I asked about, you know, potting other plants together with the jade, because,
yes.
you know, the succulent garden is so common now, like gifting
yes.
people just a variety of succulents all planted together. And I always
yes.
wonder, do people just keep it that way, or do you end up repotting?
Oh, no. You know, I get them and separate them all out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have received a couple of those, and I just say, oh, okay, I'm going to take this out and this out and this out. And yeah, and then I put them all into their own little spaces, may have them together, but no, I tend to take them all out. I think a lot of it is pretty. It's pretty marketing.
It's cute,
when you
yeah.
do all the succulents together, because many of them are very different colors. In fact, some of the jade plants, they have purple on their leaves too. That's
oh.
never happened to any of mine, but they can have like purple stripes in them. Not
That's
all
gorgeous.
The time. Mm-hmm.
Did,
yeah.
wait, did we even discuss, like, what color are they actually, the green, the leaves?
They're
are they
actually
green?
Like a deep green.
Okay.
Very, and they feel, they look shiny, like exactly the way they feel. Their leaves are quite
maybe
shiny, a shiny green.
Maybe the shine is what made them become money plants. Susan, thank
maybe.
You so much. This is a lovely convo,
Bye.
And I'm excited that we're going to keep talking Fridays with you.
Bye.
Susan Kearney is our gardener who joins us every Friday. Today we covered the money plant, also known as the jade. And we're going to take a break and come back with Ryan Huey for the Chatty Bookshelf. We're talking sci-fi today. Be right back.
Don't go away. There's more great conversation with Kelly and Ramya right around the corner.
As we fix and troubleshoot the fun tech glitches that come upon Kelly McDonald on a Friday afternoon, we carry on with the show. This is Kelly and Ramya on AMI, and we get into a Friday staple at this time. We love talking audiobooks just before the weekend and leave people with recommendations and just a refreshed attitude about reading. Let's bring on Ryan Huey for the Chatty Bookshelf.
Who knew an entire library could fit inside your pocket? I'm Ryan Huey. This is the Chatty Bookshelf, where we talk audiobook trends, news, and author interviews.
Hey, Ryan, how's your reading week going?
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's going really well, actually. And you know what? I've had some time to get down to the nitty-gritty and even clear up that to-read list and that Amazon, or Audible, I should say, wish list. But even more exciting is, this just happened this morning, but I made a new author friend, and he might want to come on the show. So
yes,
I'm pushing him, so keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, your author friends, narrator friends, all of the above come with strings, and the strings is that they got to come on the Chatty Bookshelf.
Well, usually they're like, hey, do you want to listen to this? I'll give you a code, but you got to leave a review. And they don't say it has to be positive or negative. So that I'm like, well, I'll leave you a review, but you know, think you should know that, you know, we host a show and this is what we do. So yeah, fingers crossed.
That's right. Yeah, this is the exact cold call conversation, right? Like, give me a free book and I'll let you come on our show. That's great. That's great. Now, are you on track, by the way, for your reading goals for the year so far? I know it's still early in the game.
I think so. So I've completed give or take two and let's say three quarters books. So once I finish this third book, I'll know, because right after it says you are on track, or you're one book behind, or you're three books behind. So it says I'm on track now, but that was updated the last when I finished my second book, which is about a say 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to be maybe a little bit behind, but they do a good job of tracking that stuff, and they're pretty on point. So we'll see. We'll see. What about you?
I didn't really make a reading goal. It was just to read as much as I did last year. And actually, mine is a bit more vague and more leaning towards what I'm going to read. You know, more memoirs, more nonfiction. Okay. I used to be such a hard-headed person about, you know, I will only read this kind of thing and this is what I'm into. But absolutely gone from that mindset and taking recommendations left and right and being part of book clubs where everybody picks is fantastic. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm pretty stubborn myself, but you know what? I might have just the thing for you. So just in 2023, and this isn't new, but what they do in January and, you know, into February is that a lot of audiobook magazines, so like Audiobook File, you know, a lot of publishers, a lot of different authors and stuff, they will release best of lists or lists that we're looking out for or all kinds of different lists. And this year's are really interesting because there's books to make you better at work, books to mm-hmm. make you more productive at work, I should say. You know, there's books to read with your family, books for the children to read to you. There's all kinds of different things. You know, there's the best of the thrillers. There's like Thrill House books, and there's books that will make you mad. And there's all kinds of different lists. And there's some really good ones out there. I had to actually stop after I made my way through about 11 lists. I'm like, I've went down this rabbit hole too far. I need to go back and kind of tailor what I'm going to be reading and what I should be looking at. So they're just amazing, the amount of lists that get put out.
And what did you do? You picked your favorite list to bring here? Come on, right?
You know what?
Too
I picked
easy.
One that I think, actually, I picked one that it's right in my wheelhouse, of course.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? I think it has a kind of a special sort of caveat to it.
All right.
So it's the sci-fi for beginners list. And obviously, I love my science fiction, but the caveat is it's binge worthy. So all of the books in the series are already out. And we know that's huge because you sit there and you, you know, listen to or read book number one, and all of a sudden you got to wait maybe upwards of a year for the next one, and it kind of isn't fresh in your mind. You got that book hangover. So these ones are really, you can just get going with it, right? You can, and you know, we're getting content from all over the place, whether it's TV shows, movies, books, and all of it is just, you know, at our fingertips, and you can just click and go and get lost, like I said, down that rabbit hole and watch hours or listen to hours. So I think this one's really cool.
Yeah, binge-worthy is definitely the buzzword, too. Like, wherever you look on streaming services, it's binge-worthy this, binge-worthy that. So it's kind of playing at a being a category now. So what, you said sci-fi for beginners that are binge-worthy. Where do you want to start?
So there are six different series on this one, and the comments were unbelievable. They were so engaging. There was upwards of 600 comments last I checked. So people are definitely engaging. So Audiophile Magazine, kudos to you, because that is great. And I just wonder if the other lists are that engaging, or, you know, getting that much content from the social media world. I found it on Twitter, but then I also did see it on Facebook and Instagram too. So it is definitely out there. I wanted to highlight two books here because they're really cool, and they have sort of a little bit of a spin on them. But I think that these are where I want to start on this list, because they're three books each, so they're trilogies. There is a little bit of a spin-off coming from the second one we're going to talk about. But for the most part, you can read the three, and you know, you might be able to do it in a month, couple months. And these ones seem to be pretty widely available.
Okay. So the first one, The first
Wings
series.
Of Ebony.
Okay.
And this one is super cool. So it's Manny Turpin is the narrator, and fantastic. It's top notch. All of the reviews, all of the things that people were saying about the narrator and the narration was just great. I guess there's several different characters that they voice, and it's all accents. Every single person has a different accent in the book, and it ranges from, you know, European to African to you know, Asian and anything in between. So the accents, there's even a German accent in there that I saw, and people were commenting on some of the characters, and there was a little bit of spoilers there because they're like, oh, this accent is, you know, so good when this happens, and I'm like, oh my goodness, stop it, Ryan, stop reading. Mm-mm. Or you know, fix your comments, guys. But it's really great. It's magical. And just a one kind of second synopsis is it's about a Black teen who has some superpowers, and he's trying to give his family and the people of his kingdom back their superpowers because somehow they're lost. I haven't got there yet, but I'm gonna get there soon. And I think people are saying it's just magical, and Manny definitely brings all of the landscapes and all of the characters to life.
So this is the trilogy, right?
Yes, this one's a trilogy.
Okay.
And it won an Audi last year, and it was on the top of the list. The third book in the series won an Audi last year, and it was one of the top listens for months and months and months from Audiophile magazine.
And one narrator, just doing
one narrator.
Exceptional
yes.
job yeah. with performance. Okay.
Yes.
So cool. I love it. We'll come back to that one, but tell us what the second one is.
The second one, this one really caught my eye, and it's called All of Us Villains. And here's a spin for you, a little bit of surprise. The bad guys win in this one.
Is that a spoiler alert?
Well, no, but okay. So that's how it's actually marketed. That's the tagline.
All right,
it's
fine.
Like, you know, the bad guys win. So it's really, really cool. A really great idea. This is a dual narration, and it's really, really just... Again, the imagery and the scenery is so great. There's not too many accents from what I read in the comment, but the performances and the different points of view are great because it's seven families, so seven different points of view. And I guess it's sort of like if you've ever seen the movie Vantage Point that came out in the early 2000s, where it's one sort of thing going on, but you get seven different viewpoints of it. So I guess the points of view are really, really great. And just, they really give you kind of a different appeal each different time. So, you know, family one or character one sees this, but then from the other angle, it's completely different. And I think I really like that. It says each chapter is a different point of view. So you could be jumping back and forth. So they say it when you're listening, to kind of be mindful to listen to the first little bit to kind of get in that mindset of where you might be within the story, because it does jump back and forth a bit.
Yeah, this one sounds really like there's a lot going on. You said you'd enjoy that. But how many books again in this one?
This one is three, but there is a spinoff coming. So I guess there's a fourth and fifth kind of short story coming. And I guess they're trying to package that as a single book. And so it'll be the fourth book. But I guess it's in the time frame and in the universe, it kind of jumps around from here, there, and everywhere. So I guess it's for like the big fans of this one that really, really enjoy it. But this one just sounds cool because, I mean... the villains don't win too often, and then that's when you're putting out as the tagline. So you're getting people are
rooting
going
for the villains.
And I get right. I guess you learn to love to hate the villains, or I guess just love the villains in this one because they really give sound emotion to all the characters.
Hey, characters are characters, right? And like you can fall in love with whoever, but I love when books and writers blur the lines a little between good guy and bad guy, and everyone's got a little good, everyone's got a little bad, but then sometimes you go traditional and you say, yeah, but we want the bad guys to win today. Why did you
and
pick...
you know what? It's great because, you know, when you blur that line, it's like, oh, I shouldn't be liking this guy, but I do.
Exactly.
And I find myself doing that quite often now, you know, the more I delve into the books.
Yep. Oh, man. And I was going to make a TV reference to Breaking Bad, and that was...
Exactly. That's a perfect example. Yeah.
Okay. Why did you pick these two? Because you said there were six on the list, right? The first one, yes. You're already in the midst of reading.
Yes, so the first one I just started it, so that's going to be the one that I finish up probably this weekend. But I really picked these because of the amount of comments, and seemed to be the two that were most commented on. And they didn't rank these books, right? It was just mostly a list. It wasn't like, oh, here's 1 through 6. It was just a list, and these two happened to just be catching everybody's eye. I couldn't tell how old the people that were commenting were, but it seemed to be like the vast majority were on these two. Another reason was, again, they're all the why I picked the entire list was it's binge worthy, right? You don't have to wait. So if you're that type of person that's like, oh, once I get through book one, I want to get through book 2, 3, 4, and 5 right away, you can do that. And secondly, I looked up, and these are available on all retailers and on Sela. So you guys can grab them wherever you guys borrow your books or wherever you choose to buy them.
Okay, I love that. Thanks for doing that for us, because most definitely, you know, it's a wonderful read, but it's not yet available in audiobook, would have been down. But I'm curious too, because you're a huge sci-fi fan, as you mentioned, and just like a fantasy fan overall. What differentiates for you the difference between something just being fantasy and something being sci-fi? Do you have an answer for that?
It's so blurry. I mean, science fiction is, I mean, really, is it fiction? We don't even know anymore, right? You have this time travel, you have this crazy technology, but we don't know. It could be like, you just think even 10 years ago, it was crazy for me to think I wouldn't have to poke my fingers to check my blood sugar. But now I scan my phone over a thing on my arm. Yep. So it's like, you know, is Ryan a robot now? So it's kind of interesting. Where that's a very good question. I mean, fantasy would obviously, and again, I don't know, maybe there is somebody out there, but you know, you have somebody with the magic powers or something, that would definitely be a little bit of on the fantasy side for me. But who knows, right? I mean, yeah, you have hoverboards for kids now, and you have all these crazy things. So it's like, are we getting there? And it seems to be, you can do more and more on the phones. Like, we were having a discussion, a couple of friends and I, about, you know, remember when you had to plug your computer into the wall and then you had to have the internet coming out? So now it's even, you know, you bring your internet with you in this little square in your pocket. So
you're pointing
it's a really
out like
hard
futuristic
question.
Seeming concepts that end
right?
up being
and,
real life. Which
and how close are we to them, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like, you know, I love the books where the space adventurers go to Mars, and I'm like, how close are we really? You know,
yes.
It's
sci-fi,
just,
yeah.
We never really know, yeah.
No, that's really interesting. And the elements that you point out, you know, kind of futuristic or time travel, or like, this just isn't real yet, but there's reason to believe that it will be soon, or could be, or to be looking back in time and doing the same thing, is kind of cool. And then magic and powers and superheroes and all of that stuff seem a little more towards fantasy. I don't know, because I don't read enough of this to know or have an idea of the different elements. But I think at the end of the day, that's what they are, right? Like, just a combination of different elements to create this world.
And I wonder, like, we were talking about, how ahead of our time are we with, in terms of, you know, the authors and the narration of these books and what they're writing about? Because, you know, you look back at shows from the 90s, and they were saying things, and now they're entirely true now. And it's like, even, you know, my dad was talking about the other day when he thought the Jetsons were, the world was going to be like the Jetsons one day. And you know, the year that they live in isn't too far away. So are we close? Are we not close? That sort of thing. It's really interesting. It's a great question. I've seen it brought up on many author panels, and it's one I like to ask. You know, what's the blurred? Where is it for you? What does it for authors and narrators?
And
that
where
I am
do
talking
you,
to and trying to...
like, as a fan, say, nah, that's too sci-fi or not enough sci-fi for me? Right. Thank you, man. Thanks for indulging me.
Take care.
Ryan Hui joins us on the Chatty Bookshelf once a week on Fridays, giving us recommendations and fun things to check out over the weekend for our audiobook listening. After the break, we're doing Cut for Time, where we weigh in on conversations and reflect on these discussions from the last week. This is Kelly and Ramia.
It's fun, insightful, and inclusive. Kelly and Ramia return in a minute. Take Kelly and Ramya with you on the go. You can stream AMI audio on your desktop or mobile devices. Find us on TuneIn Radio, OOTunes, and as a preset on your Victor Reader Stream. Or head to ami.ca/listenlive for our live feed.
As we wrap up the week of shows, we have this tradition of cut for time, which is when we have reflections of conversations, discussions, and most importantly, get to say what we had to say and didn't have time for. Can you imagine? Not enough time to talk during this show? Yes, but it does happen. And there are many, many, many wonderful things that get discussed on this show. So it's kind of difficult at the end of the week to say, okay, this is the one thing that I want to spend a couple minutes chatting about. But it's nice because we've carved out that time and we get to discuss it. And then, you know, you get an idea of things that we've talked about throughout the week if you didn't get a chance to join us live during the repeat or on podcast. So Grant Hardy joins me. I'm Ramia Amuddin. Grant Hardy joins me right now to go through Cut for Time together. And Grant, if we can get Kelly on, then we'll get his thoughts as well. But he might have a cut for time next week. We'll
I was
see.
Just going to say, is this the new tradition? Like we're cutting a host during Cut for Time?
Exactly.
Because I don't want to see how that would end. Because by the third week, Cut for Time, we'll have zero hosts left.
Zero hosts left, or like one host doing all three.
Right.
We cut other hosts off. Yes. Oh, man. Too good. But yeah, we'll start with you.
So this is kind of a little fun fact, actually, about this clip. I met this woman when we were teens. We met on like a forum bulletin board, and she used to tutor me in math. Isn't that insane? she ended up advancing her math and science focused career and now works for an organization called Astro Access, which seeks to improve inclusion of people with disabilities in space exploration. Here is Lindsay Iazzolino talking a little bit about her work.
We're just getting the clip.
I hope I don't have to do my best Lindsay impression.
I hope not either as well.
So there were a few, the people with various disabilities. So there were blind people, deaf people, people with who use wheelchairs, and a couple of people who are neurodivergent. And so we tended to work on projects based on accessibility needs and things that seemed important based on those. So the blind crew, of which I was a part, we were working on a project where we developed a system of tactile graphics to help people orient while they're in zero gravity. Because if you think about it, you know, you're blind, there's no gravity. You don't know, like, there's not that automatic, we like when we have gravity, we don't even have to think about where the floor is. But when you don't have gravity, any surface you land on could potentially be the floor, it could be the ceiling, it could be the walls. Yeah. So we developed a system of tactile graphics. So, you know, you might be floating around, you reach out, you touch a wall, and you can feel a symbol and be like, ooh, which way is down?
So there are, man, there's so much here.
I know.
We always talk about how cool it is to have women in STEM careers, but this woman is just insanely talented. Like she's awesome and totally a credit to the STEM industry. But you know what I think is so interesting is that, you know, people always talk about accessibility as, you know, for people with disabilities. Some people need it and some people don't need it. But what was interesting is you know, her system of tactile sort of graphics basically that she developed for zero gravity, they're trying to standardize basically these symbols that you can feel that would be on the walls of the plane or the ship, and it helps orientate blind and partially sighted individuals to what's up and what's down. But one interesting point that she made is that it actually could really assist a sighted person as well in an emergency situation, because when your power goes out, your lights go out. My brother and I used to think it was hilarious in our high school when our power went out and everybody just went nuts because they couldn't see and they couldn't find the exits, and we were just sort of walking, you know, just normally to the exits. So I just found it interesting that, you know, you may say like, oh, a blind person would never do this kind of career. This just isn't a thing that we would do. But not only is she proving that we may indeed have a place in this type of STEM career, it may actually benefit people other than us. So having those diverse perspectives can be really beneficial.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And she pointed to, like you said, so much. This entire conversation and the part two that is definitely happening on the show is worth several re-listens, because there's something you'll pick up every time that feels new. When she was talking about this in this clip particularly, Grant, I thought of orientation and mobility, because, you know, you, I, and Kelly have had several conversations about O&M skill development and lack thereof for members of the community and things like that. But just imagining how disoriented you would feel with zero gravity. Like, there's just so much to take in about that concept. You know, this tactile indication system is one way to handle, but how about all these other things? Like, how do you know how fast you're moving, how hard you've pushed, the intensity of your movements, and how do you get, like, just wrapping my head around all the changes from what I know here on Earth right now in my movement, my body, like all of the above, to take away gravity and done. Like, everything as we know it is gone. And for someone with low vision, how disorienting that could be, and differently disorienting for someone who has no vision, it's fascinating to me. When I read Chris Hadfield's book, his first one, sorry, can't recall the title right now, I was in awe of, you know, imagining myself in the situations that he's put himself through, or, you know, astronauts train for. I'm thinking, there's got to be so much extra effort put into this.
Yeah. Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I can't even imagine that. It's just having more than sort of your typical perspective of the person that you would typically expect to be in zero gravity, but actually having people from the disability community, we may actually be able to advance the cause more, which, I mean, let's be real, we might need to one day if the Earth, you know, if we keep not being good to the Earth, we might need space exploration one day.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, that's a little dark.
I was going to say, like, oh, this went off. But no, 100% true, though. Like, we have to be exploring these things because, you know, what are we going to say? Like, you're left behind? Uh-oh. That's a whole different problem. Want to move to another discussion we had this week. On Tuesday, we had our monthly parenting chat with Lucia Belafonte, and this was an incredible conversation for me. Here she is explaining model reading.
You know, whether your parent is reading a book themselves and sharing that experience with you and letting you know that they've read something and really enjoying it, that's modeling reading. And another way is reading together, or having the child read when they're able to read out loud as part of that shared experience. And then talking about what you've read together. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean it in the sense of like drilling your child and saying, you know, what was that book about? No, I just mean a really nice, natural conversation that the two of you, or however many of you there are going to share. And you could, you know, you could ask the question and say, you know, what was your favorite part of the story? And why was it your favorite part? And then going back to the idea of modeling, you know, we don't have to directly teach something to our children. We can teach it when we model. So for example, if your child has answered and they've used a word inappropriately, you as the adult can now use that word again in a sentence, but appropriately. And so you've modeled the correct way to use that word or that phrase. And there you go, without having to, like, you know, sound like a drill sergeant. I think that's lovely.
Lucia brings forth conversations to the show that are always presented in such loving, gentle, beautiful, respectful ways. And I saw that and I felt that with this conversation. I love reading now, and I would consider myself an avid audiobook listener, but this wasn't always the case for me. When I was growing up, it was difficult reading. It was difficult. I actually pretended to read for such a long time because I wanted to win the prizes that my teachers were handing out for people who made it through books. And I was like, oh, I'm never going to get through this book. I just have to pretend my way through. And honestly, like, this is a, it was a serious discomfort because I never felt in the zone with reading. And that's because everyone around me was sighted and was reading sighted quickly, you know, well. They were presenting well, they were reading well, they were getting through books. And this is anywhere from my family to my peers to my friends to my babysitters, my grandparents, whoever. But I couldn't find that spot, you know, this lovely kind of reading feels good, reading is relaxing, reading is actually a vibe. I couldn't find that because as a low vision person, I was discouraged, unfortunately, from reading Braille when I was heading into school as a kid. And then I was told, well, read large print. But that was straining for me. And carrying around big physical books because of the large print, you know, hundreds of pages long and took up your entire desk space, was also not great. And then the lighting would make such a big difference on how well I read. So I struggled with reading for pretty much a decade, if not more, and had to find the love for reading. So what she points out here, what Lucia is talking about, makes so much sense to me. And I think that if we can take part in reading this way, say, let's do it together, or you read what makes you feel good. You read how it makes you feel good. And maybe I can take part in that learning as well. Like you learn Braille and we learn Braille together. And you show options and choices and ways to actually feel good about reading. And I think that this makes such a big difference in people's lives. We don't, honestly, like I feel we don't have enough conversations about this, the early stages of reading. And when you hear people say, yeah, my dad is the reason why I love reading, or my mom taught me that going to the library was a good time. And I've picked that up over the years because of people who've modeled it for me. This is an extent of that, right? Or the beginning of that even. Kelly, we have you back on. So I wondered if you wanted to comment.
I say, because I had a chance during Lucia's segment to comment on this, so I won't take up time really too much with it. But that is the way that I felt put on the road to audiobooks, having my parents read to me, but hearing people speak, listening and picking up word choices and realizing at a very young age, there are many words to say the same thing and you change it up. And listening to a lot of broadcasters, it got me interested. Where I did stumble is because the accessibility of reading for me wasn't there. It had to be a form that I could do. And when I started to learn Braille, yeah, got better, got faster. But reading a lot with audio and then screen readers with the computer really put me on that road. Am I an avid sit down and read a book myself person? No, but I certainly will love to sit down and listen to a book and can lose myself definitely in it. Do I strive and do I be a little more creative? No, I don't. And Grant, do you have a comment here? Do you want to make any before we slip into the last one?
Yeah, you know what? There are so many parenting tips about like here's how to make chores fun, whatever. And sometimes I'm a bit skeptical. Reading, you truly can make fun.
Yes.
My family, we always read together. That was a huge thing that we did. Our mom read to us. We had the print Braille books. Kids just dig those, you know, when you bring them into the school, they can feel the Braille, they can read the Braille. I don't like when reading is so punitive and punishing children for not reading or reading the wrong thing or reading too quickly. I know we're short for time here. So Kelly, I don't know if you want to move on to your clip or...
I'll jump into it, but I do remember that whole, well, reading an audiobook doesn't count. I remember the time of that. Ugh. Folks, also on Monday's show, we spoke with O&M specialist Mark Rankin about his time as a consultant with a TV show. Here he's talking about how that went.
So it was three weeks of shooting the pilot. I was there for the whole thing because I just have a headset and I would sort of, most of my time I would spend wandering around. Most of the time I would spend in the craft truck, actually. I probably ate 5 kilograms of chocolate covered almonds on that 3 week. But anyway, and then I'd hear when they start to shoot or they'd block the next scene, and I would go out to make kind of just check what might be potential issues for her whenever there was movement involved. And then they would shoot it and I would usually go through and say, oh, you know what? It kind of looked funny. She sort of avoided something that she could only have done visually or, you know, something happened. Right. And then they would run it back and maybe shoot it again. So they weren't always crazy about me because often I would say that just didn't look right. And explain it to them. And sometimes I felt that Lori and I were kind of like played off against each other, because they would go to Lori and say, this is what we did. How's it sound? And she'd say, that sounds good. And then I would watch and I'd say, Lori, this is how it looked. And she'd say, oh, that's not so good.
So I have to wonder, are we at that point now where people have learned enough, whether it's through social media or seeing persons with disabilities reflected in shows, that now we can also accept there's sometimes not the nicest person who has a disability, not the worst, not the smartest, not the dumbest, okay? That we get to see the true diversity as we do others on screen that match all those different categories, including the way that somebody, three people, may pour their milk into their glass, some with a finger, some with one of the height detectors that tells them, hey, it's full, or you're at this point, somebody who goes by the sound as it pours and says, okay, I'm almost near the rim. I think, guys, this is where I want to see. And I know for consultants, it for the longest time was almost a black and white. It had to be this way. You had to know how to be the best guide dog user, cane user, person who makes the, without that being possible, because we don't have as many then, maybe yet, not yet, consultants that were professional enough yet, that had so much experience being a consultant because it's so new. Do we need to take that information from everyone? Do we need to put it out there if we're reflecting a character? Yeah, but a character is a character, and what they do is what they do. You know, and I think that we're at that stage where we can call them out and say, well, I wouldn't do that. And that's okay. There are many people that are on television doing things and the character next to them wouldn't do it the same way. But we understand that's life. Grant, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you being with us here as we do our cut for time segment. And of course, folks, you can check out all these segments through our podcast. Just simply subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. Rumya and I will take a break. We'll return. We'll tell you a little bit about some things going on over the weekend on the networks and what our show has in store for you on Monday. It's Kelly and Rumya.
We'll be back with more of Kelly and Rumya after this short break.
Going to have to be like me, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to check out one of the segments from the program, go check out the podcast. For example, the Chatty Bookshelf with Ryan Hui. I got to say, what little bit I could hear of that conversation during my technical issues that were going on sounded great. I do have to say there's definitely the dividing line, Rumya, of sci-fi versus...
fantasy.
What were we talking about? Fantasy, thank you. I knew we were coming up with...
Right.
I think so many people would totally, who are into one or the other, say, guys, there's a clear dividing line.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is when you think about all the stuff, and we do this as kids, oh, wow. Imagining talking to somebody and seeing them. Wow. That's amazing. We do it all the time now with FaceTime and so on. But to us today, I really think, what are writers putting into stories that will be fact years from now? I mean, the stuff we read in the 50s and 60s and heard about, oh, that's great. Boy, what an imagination. Oh, we're doing it in the 80s now, whatever it might have been. And I think that that's truly, when you get talking, your sci-fi and some of those things, that's truly it. Fantasy, I love just the fact that somebody can be so creative and just invent a world. And I think that to me is to answer the question you put out there with Ryan, I think that's really the defining factor.
Yeah, it's like dystopian becoming reality. And that's what Ryan was saying, too, when he was trying to explain his own perspectives and interests, you know, of what he'll read. But I think you're right. There's probably a very solid line. It's just more how much will you go over that line to the other side.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Folks, we'll give you a quick tease, too, as time's a little on against us here. Watch this Saturday on AYTV, Employable Me. In the episode entitled Austin and Madison, race car driver Austin wants to turn his knowledge of cars into a paying job. Meanwhile, Madison, who has Down syndrome, is looking to pursue a career in modeling. Check it out Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern on AMI TV. Rum?
All right. Sunday mornings on AMI Audio. You got the best of the Globe and Mail today. And this is hosts Mike Ross and Corinne Van Dusen. They deliver news, editorials and business, sports and entertainment, everything and anything pulled from the week's edition of the Globe and Mail. The best of the Globe and Mail today airs Sunday on AMI Audio, 8 a.m. Eastern.
And I've got to say, for the AMI TV content, remember, check out the AMI app at any time to look for stuff on demand, of course, folks. Earlier this week, we talked about celebrating other religious and cultural holidays like the Lunar New Year. Monday on Know Your Rights, we'll look at a few cases where individuals have requested those things to be taken into consideration at their workplaces, but sometimes it conflicts with work or school.
Familiar voice on the network, a community reporter on Now with Dave Brown, Milena Kazanavicius, is actually joining us to talk about her recent journey with a guide dog. Louis has been retired, and Hope is now her new guide dog. And she's going to talk us through everything that's been going on around that for her. It was kind of a difficult time.
Mm-hmm. That'll be during our AMI checkup. And we'll be talking about holidays again, as I mentioned, with Danielle McLaughlin on Know Your Rights. Enjoy your weekend, Rum. Take care of yourself. We'll see you back here Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Yes, we will, Kels. Have a great weekend yourself.
All right, folks. Get out of here, will ya?
Hosts Kelly McDonald and Ramya Amuddin.
Reporter Grant Hardy.
Senior show producer Jeff Ryman. Visual producer Megan McGrath.
Graphics Andrew Antonello. Production assistant Kingsley Juco.
Control room operators Daniel Penamondo, Eliza Rocco, Parker Oxtoby.
Director Irene Solomon.
Manager of live production Paula Deneen.
Manager of operations Kyle Harper.
Manager of AMI audio Andy Frank.
Director of TV production Kara Nye.
Vice President, Content Development and Production, John Melville.
President and CEO, David Arrington.
Give us your feedback, 1-866-509-4545.
Copyright 2023, Accessible Media Inc.
I remember as a low vision child, I was totally into this eat carrots. I didn't mind them, thank goodness, because there were other things they would say were good for your eyes too that I wasn't such a big fan on. Now, I did like spinach, of course, Popeye and the strength thing, so I was okay, but my family really didn't get into spinach, so there wasn't a lot of that around. So I had to just suffer with my iron pills, and which didn't help. I had an iron deficiency as a child. Lots of Flintstone vitamins, I remember. But definitely I bought into the carrots. Now, of course, I preferred it was carrot cake, for sure, once I discovered that, which I didn't really discover until I was about 11 or 12. And when my mother discovered that I liked carrot cake, oh, it was always around. The Philadelphia cream cheese, I think that's what gave her the hint, because we got some of that in the house and she was, oh, he likes that. Oh, so then you can devise all sorts of different things that were baked goods that you could put that stuff on. You could make that wonderful icing with it, i.e. in comes the carrot cake. And wasn't something a lot of my family liked. Again, it was kind of up there at the spinach, but we'd eat it. But boy, did I enjoy it. The moistness, the icing. Anyway, what else did I buy into when it came to the eyes? Well, of course, you know, you always hope for that super surgery. As a child, I was a huge fan of the $6 million man and thought, okay, if they can make that eye for him to read what's on a postage stamp, you know, 400 yards away, they can do something for me. Right? Well, maybe not today, but in a year or two. That year or two has never come yet, but I'm still waiting. It was so much fun to think of those things. And I know sometimes people might say, well, wasn't that like a tease, though? Stuff like the $6 million man, eating carrots. Did you actually convince yourself you could see more? And I don't know if as a child I knew my eyes were not going to be fixed anytime soon, that we weren't there in science, that the doctors couldn't do any more. They could work at preserving what I had. And I think at a young age, I did understand that much. But at a young age, I was also told, eventually I'll see nothing. So it was a happy mix to think of those kinds of things. The day I could have my bionic eye after, eating lots of carrot cake.
You know, that was the fantasy that I had. And now I don't think about the eyes, about the bionic eye, but boy, lots of carrot cake does sound good. And again, something I haven't had for a while, so maybe that's why my eyes are deteriorating.
I'm Margaret Shepherd of the AMI podcast, Tripping On Air. Every month, my co-host Alex Hajar and I spill the tea on what it's really like to live with MS. Watch Tripping On Air on YouTube or download wherever you get your pods.